Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's 2025, bitch. It's the Philosopher's Stone podcast.
Way to demonetize us right off the bat.
I wish we were in a position to be demonetized. That would be great.
Nothing.
This isn't our first podcast of the new year. No,
it's not.
Just opening up our TPS pod 420 email.
It's email time.
And we have no emails.
Email time is over.
We might be one of the longest running podcasts to not build an audience.
It's pretty impressive. How the algorithm just buries us.
Why? It's because we're dangerous. Our ideas are too dangerous, man. Yeah.
Too potent. Like a pickle. Like a really old pickle finally unleashed.
To be fair, we have done zero self-promotion. It's been entirely word of mouth.
Isn't the algorithm supposed to promote you? Like, aren't we supposed to be... like, how do you promote a podcast?
Other than most podcasts on the app do social media as well.
Ah.
But social media has repeatedly been nothing but a detriment to my life.
Yeah, detriment.
Detriment. It's not something that I, as a person, mix well with.
I will say chats are good. Group chat, the group chat function, and the like the group function, where you can schedule things and communicate with people.
Well, that's basically
that
what
stuff is good.
The only thing
that's all private. That's all private interaction, basically. That's not.
That's the only thing that's keeping Facebook afloat right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there's a reason, but like Facebook, all it's good for is organizing events.
You mean Meta?
I mean Facebook.
Oh, you don't mean Meta?
I don't think so. I think I have my Facebook tab open. It says Facebook on it. Meta is the company that owns both Facebook and Instagram.
So what's keeping Facebook afloat?
Well, I mean, the only reason I'm keeping it is because of the event function.
What's keeping Meta afloat? Facebook or Instagram or WeChat?
Instagram is probably where they make
WeChat's
more money.
Big. Yeah.
Instagram is probably the top social media app right now. I don't know. I'm talking on my ass. It's that or TikTok, which Meta just bought, basically. Didn't they not?
What? Meta bought TikTok? No.
Meta, I think, is buying TikTok. Are they not?
No way.
They just got a verified. They got a verified account. So Facebook, and this is all shit I'm seeing on TikTok. Facebook made a verified TikTok account on the eve of the ban. So a lot of people are speculating: is Facebook actually going to end up owning TikTok?
No way. Meta is being sued for monopoly antitrust laws right now. There's no way they could possibly buy TikTok.
But won't Daddy Trump make it all go away?
I don't know. It's the Federal Trade Commission. I don't know if he controls that.
The Federal Trade Confederation.
They're sending in the droids as we speak.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it does feel like we're at the dawn of a new age, and it's either a great age or a terrible age, depending on who you ask and who you are. But it does feel like we are in the midst of a very, I'm taking my vitamins for my shitty wrists. It feels like we are at the precipice of a new dawn of sorts now.
The precipice of a new dawn.
It feels like that.
They call that a tortured metaphor.
Oh, okay. Why? Well, you know what I mean.
You're combining
changes in the air. You have to admit changes in the air.
Yeah. Okay.
Precipice of a new dawn might be a bit extreme. Well, chances are my life won't be any different a year from now, other than what, you know, normal, regular life progression stuff. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be at the border defending our land from American invaders anytime soon. Although the tariff thing might be, I've just been poor my whole life. So it's like, what's another 4 years or whatever of being broke?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I was born in the darkness.
Yeah. A tortured metaphor just means that the metaphor doesn't actually work anymore because there's two different metaphors happening at the same time. Hmm. A precipice is a cliff.
Yeah.
And that's one way, right? You're on the precipice.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new dawn is like a totally different metaphor for
the precipice to me means the edge, as in we're about to begin.
The edge, yeah. What is the edge of dawn? What is the edge of dawn, right?
The edge of dawn?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Literally sounds like one of the Twilight movies.
Yeah. Edge of dawn.
All right. Well, should we talk about the inauguration and for just a quick minute?
Oh, sure.
I don't want this to become a political podcast because I'm completely saturated and I'm oversaturated. I need to take a real long break. And we all know the next 4 years is just going to be clickbait anyways. So,
well, let's talk about it at a higher level. And that way we won't get.
Okay. First of all, just snap judgment. Was there a Nazi salute? Was there an intentional Nazi salute in your opinion?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if like Nazi. Like, I think it was like power, but yeah, maybe Nazi, Roman, definitely fascist. Definitely.
Was it a dog whistle of sorts?
I don't know if it's a dog whistle. I think he's just 12 years old.
Because there's two options. Either he's a Nazi and he accidentally let his Nazi slip out a little bit, or he's incredibly socially inept to like, you imagine taking as much heat as he does for being a Nazi and then accidentally giving like a very clear Sieg Heil salute, even if he didn't mean to, even if he was just an autistic guy giving his heart to the people. Like, you have to be like, what would be the equivalent?
He's 12 years old and he loves to be the center of attention. That's it. He can't help himself. He knows if he does that, it'll be huge news.
So you think he did it in order to generate a media whirlwind or whatever?
Yeah, I think he likes being talked about.
So you think it was an intentional Sieg Heil, but not because he's a Nazi?
No, I think he's 12 years old. He's trolling it. He's like, oh, it was I meant it from the heart, or it was a Roman salute. Or he's just trolling people. He's just 12 years old. Oh, he doesn't give a fuck.
Ultimately, you think it was
his bonus. His bonus from Tesla was $54 billion. Okay, $54 billion bonus. If you make $54 billion, you would have to earn $100,000 a day for over 1,500 years.
So, okay, first of all, bonus.
That's his bonus.
I don't think you should even be using the word bonus when it comes to that amount of money.
Well, he doesn't really make a salary. It's all stocks, so that's his bonus.
Okay, so to be clear, you think it was an intentional troll, but nothing really truly nefarious?
I think he's extremely nefarious, yeah. But I don't think he's like, I'm going to get the... I don't think he meant like warm up the gas chambers, that kind of thing.
So you don't think you would consider him a Nazi?
Who knows, right? Who knows, right? I don't know if he holds genocidal beliefs. Nazis have very specific beliefs about the Jews. That's kind of what makes them Nazis.
True.
He's certainly a fascist.
Mm.
Like, he is absolutely 100% a fascist who wants to control the world with his money.
Well, he's doing a damn good job of it so far. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
but that's sort of the point of the whole thing is that, this inauguration where you're bringing in the new president, right? And he's got a whole cabinet full of billionaires. Mm-hmm. And you listen to his speech, right? His speech was not a grand vision. His speech was like a laundry list of like, no more, there's officially only two genders and we're going to get the woke out of the military. It's like, he was just sounded so bored when he was giving the speech.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't seem to care at all. And it just sounded to me like he was just running through the laundry list of, he's like, we're going to take back the Panama Canal. We're going to take back the Panama Canal.
Didn't he call it the dawn, or he says the golden age, or the dawn of the golden age? We're about to enter a new golden age, or something like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of a grand vision. He means he's for sale, basically, is what he means. The White House is for sale, and he's reading the approved speech. The billionaires have approved this speech. as like the list of things they want him to address to turn America around, right? Rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. That was another big one he had.
Is there a real, like, what is the point of that?
Of renaming it?
Mm-hmm.
Because fuck Mexico, America.
Oh. Okay. Well, yeah, see, it's just everything's getting so dumb so quickly.
It's very simple. Fuck you. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. That's it. that's it.
The three fuck yous of power.
Yeah. The fuck you branch, the fuck you branch, and the fuck you branch. And they're all, yeah, it's all going to be fuck you.
And, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we're horrifically demonetized at this point, but that's just... I have to say,
how am I going to feed my kid now that the podcast money won't be coming in?
Yeah, but it's fascist in the sense that, well, it's almost not even fascist because it is oligarchy, because in fascism the government is still in control, the business is just kind of subordinate but still sort of at the whim of government.
Right.
It seems here like Trump is just. It does not seem like the billionaires are like kowtowing to him. Like they're giving some money and stuff, but it seems like he wants their favor more than they need him.
Right. Okay.
And so they're it seems to me like they're dictating what the government is going to be for the next 4 years. It's going to be seriously fucking up pro-American mega corporations.
Well.
He's coming in to save TikTok, right? The Chinese algorithm gathering thing. Like, what's that all about? How is he going to say? What does that mean? Like, how is he going to save it? What is this deal going to be? Is he going to give TikTok to Meta, right? Like you said earlier, Daddy Trump is here.
Daddy Trump.
Maybe he can make the Federal Trade Commission drop this and just flex the power of the billionaires. Be like, look, Mark, we're friends. Dana is on the board, right? We all love the UFC. We go to the fights. Great time, right? How about we give you TikTok, right? You want TikTok? You want it?
You want TikTok?
You want the TikTok? You can make that happen. I get a little commish.
You see Joe Rogan at the inauguration?
Rogan was at the inauguration?
Or like the after party, and
he was wearing like a box to stand on or something.
You'll have to toss me.
You have to toss me. Not the beard.
Theo Vaughn's Legolas. Nice. He was wearing this suit that was like made him look like the Penguin from the comic books. Like he had a tailed suit.
I have to Google this.
You know, could have been AI for all I know, but someone made that comment that he looks like the Penguin. But yeah, I was watching some old UFC clips the other day, and Joe Rogan was commentating when he was younger, and holy shit, he was annoying to listen to.
Yeah, he has an annoying voice.
It was a very grating, yelling commentary that he used to do, and I don't know if I just didn't notice it at the time, because he's calmed down, but like go watch some of these like golden era UFC fights, like Chuck Liddell, and listen to young Rogan scream. It's really hard to, it's pretty hard to listen to.
I didn't pay attention to
older, more slowed down, contained commentary. Although I don't watch the UFC very much anymore.
I didn't pay attention until like 2016. But he's super annoying. Yeah. He doesn't understand how sure he is, so he doesn't know what kind of suit to wear. I think that's why he hates suits, because he doesn't understand.
He always looks like he's weirdly dressed on all of his specials. Like his shirts are always too big. He always wears like way too big shirts. Like
he seems to have it down now, where he tucks in a dress shirt and that's it, and that seems to work. Really?
Because there's been a few specials where it looks like he's wearing his boyfriend's shirt that he like stole.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, the frock code is tough.
Yeah.
You got to be tall. You have to be tall for a frock.
Yes. Yes, you got it. All right. Well, let's try not to become a political podcast. Our listeners are going to be furious about that if they are out there.
Oh, really? You've done the market research.
I fucking have no idea. I just know that I get it. Well, first of all, every podcast on earth is talking about this shit right now. And I don't think we are such unique thinkers that we're going to have any takes that are blowing minds out the back of skulls.
Wait, what is everyone talking about? Oh, the inauguration?
Well, just, yeah, basically the new administration, politics in general. And you know how it was last time? Every day it's going to be headlines on shit Trump did. And it's like, I can't do that for another 4 years.
It's exhausting.
It's like COVID. It was like every day you knew you're going to hear more news about COVID. It's just so annoying. Like, I just fucking, I don't know. Can't we just get back to like fluff pieces and natural disasters? I mean, we're going to get a lot more natural disasters. So that's at least we have that to look forward to.
We could talk about the death of David Lynch, the filmmaker, the director, the great artist.
But may I stop you there
for
1 minute?
Please.
Just so I can tell the world. I'm like a proud father right now. I mean, it's so funny because I have a baby child and I wasn't even about to talk about that, but I bought a new drum set. The listeners have to know. No. Although I am very proud of that boy. He's crazy on the Jolly Jumper these days. But I bought myself, I found a blurry picture on Facebook Marketplace and I said, I looked at it and I was like, is that really a Gretsch renowned kit for this little amount with symbols included? This is a kit that I thought I wouldn't buy until I was like retired because they're expensive. And I just happened to find some guy out in a tiny town called Olala, which is basically just a giant trailer park. And it was tucked away in a storage container. And you know how when you're really happy about something, you just got to tell the world. Well, you're my world, Sam, and also the listeners. So you can all be happy for me. The symbols were all covered in gunk and shit, and I polished them up to a new shine. Tomorrow I'm going to set it up and just let it go. And that's what I'm looking forward to this week. Oh, also, I'm getting to news. If anyone's going to see Jeremy Hotz at the Kelowna Community Theater, I'll be doing 20 minutes.
Wow.
So that could be fun. I don't know what ticket sales are like. I remember I did. I opened for Sean Majumdar at the Vernon Event Center, and it was like, maybe a quarter full.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to spill the tea. Ooh.
What do you mean?
Just kidding. No, just kidding.
So, I'm excited for those two things this week. I get to play this fancy ass drum set. I mean, it's not the fanciest drum set you can buy, but it's definitely like three or four levels above anything I've ever played, let alone owned. So, And then I get to do this spot for a Canadian legend in the comedy scene. And then I don't know, February, I feel like I just want to take the entire month off of doing anything. Just sleep.
Yes, that's nice. That's nice. Let's talk about David Lynch.
Okay. Fuck your passion. Let's move on to my passion.
No, that's
people don't know this about Sam, but at one point he wanted to go to film school and be a director. Is that not right, Sam?
That is true. Yes. Yeah.
And he made he made his own films, much in the style of David Lynch, few of which yours truly was the star of, or maybe not the star, but a character.
Certainly.
I remember the one where you were the old lady and you gave birth to this like potato sort of like eraser head, but like your version of it.
Yeah, I probably made the worst film school application ever made. In the application, I said I didn't need school. And the rejection. I was that dumb. And the rejection letter was harsh, to put it mildly.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you still have it?
No. God.
No. Do you recall anything it said? Well, did it say something like, well, if you don't need school, why would you give you a spot?
I think that was mentioned at one point, yeah.
Oh, it was fun to make those. Glad to be part of it.
Yeah. Anyway, David. Yeah. So David Lynch died. Very sad. But yeah, I read a lot of obituaries about him, and that was a lot of people seem to like him as a person. Probably not going to hear any bad stories about him after he's dead.
Yeah. That does happen though a lot these days. Where someone will die and everybody will, and then there'll be someone, well, did you know that he doesn't talk to one of his estranged daughters?
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah. He had a few wives. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So maybe some women don't like him. That's fair. But who doesn't?
When it comes to actual people. Go on.
No. What was I going to say? I was just going to say that... I don't think anyone else has such a uniquely realized vision as he did in film, where you can like be watching one of his movies, like you can pick a frame from any of his films, just pick one frame, and you can, if you didn't know it was a Lynch film, you could probably guess that it was just from one frame.
I don't even know if I've seen an entire David Lynch film besides Eraserhead, which I can't say I enjoyed. I could say it left an impact on me. That's for goddamn sure.
You could see one frame from Eraserhead and you would know. Unless it was like black or like just gray or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you could see one frame and you would know, like, oh, that was...
Oh, I mean, if the main character's in the frame, absolutely.
Yeah, but even if it's just like a shot of like a puddle or something.
Hmm. Like a... Interesting. See, I'm not as familiar with his work as you are, although I know he has a unique style. Like, I'm very aware of that.
Yeah.
But like, I remember the rabbit thing that was fucking weird and dark for some reason.
Yeah, he was very good at unsettling you. Very good at unsettling, yes. Creating that feeling of being unsettled.
Yes.
Really good at that.
I'm not sure if I saw Mulholland Drive or. What was the other one? Blue Velvet or something?
Yeah, that's another famous one. They did Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, did the TV series Twin Peaks.
Right. So that's so funny because every time I've heard of the name, like for years before I knew it was David Lynch, when I heard Twin Peaks, I assumed it was like a reality TV show where like young people fucking drink and argue. You know, one of those ones. I thought Twin Peaks was like a ski lodge.
Oh, okay. That's funny. Yeah. He did. Yeah. So yeah, very good at unsettling. But he also did like The Elephant Man and Straight Story, which are The Elephant Man's got, and I think it ends kind of, not totally happily, not totally sad, but
he took a crack at Dune as well.
He took a crack at Dune. Yep. And that he, no one else would ever make a Dune film like he did. And it wasn't great. It didn't do well. It was a total bomb, and it's kind of weird. But some things that it does are really cool. And it did some things that Denis didn't do. It did the whole Aaliyah plotline from the book. It actually put that in the movie. That was pretty good.
I don't know that plotline. Never got through the book. I'm just scraping through the book I'm reading right now.
Okay, so spoilers for the book. But in the book, Jessica actually gives birth in the book, and the baby is like... you know, like a super, like way too intelligent already can talk.
Oh, right. And then spoiler alert, doesn't the baby end up killing Baron Harkonnen?
Yes. The baby's, or not, it's not a baby at that point. Like it can, it's like a toddler, 6 years old or something.
Toddler.
I don't a think lot more time passes old. In the book. Than in
I
the
see. And then, Paul Atreides' son is actually the actual prophesied one.
Yeah. The Kwisatz Haderach, yeah. Or maybe it might be his grandson, I can't remember. So Lynch, he did Dune, and then he did, and then he also did Twin Peaks again, Twin Peaks The Return, where he did a
what
whole other
What is the premise of Twin Peaks? It's not a ski lodge?
Oh my God. It is based on kind of like a mountain town and probably in the Pacific Northwest. But it's about a murder happens in this small town. High school beauty queen, Laura Palmer, gets murdered. Her body's found. And I think the body of another girl as well are like found out in the woods. And it's just about the investigation of her death by the FBI and all the sort of the underbelly of what's really going on in this seemingly idyllic town. And it's just very, very Lynchian. And it gets to the point where you just have to say, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
And that's appealing to you.
Well, I haven't finished it yet. Like I just, cause it's the last major work of his that I haven't seen. And he's dead now.
And so I gotta watch it eventually.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess. The whole thing is that it makes no, it's like you're going through this ringer of what the hell is going on, but you know, he's going to, finish in some sense, some way that you're not totally put out. Like you don't feel cheated at the end of one of his films, even though they are kind of incomprehensible.
Right. So is Twin Peaks, was it a widely popular show? Is it more of a niche?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's like famous because of how fucking weird it is, but I don't think it made a ton of money ever. Right. Maybe it was more popular. Like the original series may have been more popular back in the day. The new one, like the one where they came out and finished it, so to speak, Twin Peaks, mm-hmm. The Return.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, holy shit. I cannot believe they gave David Lynch that much money and let him do like 25 episodes of this, of this show. Wow. Because like there are like entire episodes where you literally have no fucking idea what is going on. But it's just riveting. Like, it's just like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Well, I might have to watch an episode and give you some feedback.
Well, it barely makes sense having seen the first two seasons. So you should definitely watch the original series first, or it'll make no sense.
I gotta watch the whole series.
You do, yeah.
I don't know if I have time for that. Maybe if I get stuck in a cryo chamber or something, I'll watch it. But I got so many shows I want to watch and so little time. It takes. Here's a little thing for incoming new fathers. If you think it takes it. If you have a 2-hour film, you are going to need to have, it's going to take you at least 6 hours to watch it sometimes. just because you cannot watch a movie when a baby is like wanting your attention or needing your attention. Like my son's at this point now where he realizes when you're looking at something that's not him and he doesn't like it. He likes your focus to be on him. So,
yeah. Yeah.
He'll be happy, happy, happy. And if you turn on a movie and be like, oh, he's happy. Let's turn on a movie and we can all watch. He'll notice your attention shift to the TV and he'll get upset about it.
Ah, interesting.
So you have to wait till he's asleep before you can really watch. And like, yeah, so many times now we've sat down to watch a movie at 6 and then we don't finish it till like 11.
Yep. Baby time.
Baby time.
Yeah, you're on baby time. Yep.
Yeah, you're at the mercy of this tiny little creature.
Amazing. Not like the Eraserhead baby, which was also a tiny little creature that had needs.
It wasn't
cute and cuddly.
No. Well, a lot of newborns are not cute or cuddly. They don't really get their cuteness.
They don't look like a...
No, I mean, that thing looked like E.T. got stretched out. That is a good like metaphor for how it feels to be a new parent, though. The way that, it's just, I have to rewatch Eraserhead. I won't, but all I recall is this: they knew it was a hideous beast, and yet they still had to like take care of it. Give me a little rundown of Eraserhead, because I only watched it the one time and I know we were blazed out of our minds and it was like 10 years ago.
Oh, like the rundown?
What is the plot?
The plot of Eraserhead is there's the guy, I guess his name is Eraserhead, I don't know, whatever, the guy.
Yeah. He looks like John, I remember him looking Henry almost like John
Spencer. Sorry.
Okay. Very tall, like thin, wispy hair, sits up high. right?
I don't know. Wait, what? Tsitsipas? What?
Like, he has like crazy hair.
Yeah, he has crazy hair. Anyway, so he has this girlfriend, Mary, and like she's at his house and she tells him that she's pregnant and they have to get married. So they move in together. She has the baby and it's this weird creature.
Yes, it is not a baby, like a human baby. Is it ever explained as to why that happened?
No, of course not. And it just is. And they can't feed it. It doesn't want to eat anything. It's always crying.
Right.
Mary, she leaves. Henry has to care for it. She runs away, I think, and abandons it.
Oh, so it's like a postpartum abandonment situation.
Yeah, because it's such a weird monster freak. She just runs away.
Right, yeah.
But he thinks it's from him. Or at least we might think that, because in the beginning of the movie, a creature that looks kind of like the baby, like shoots out of his mouth in this weird space vision that he has, sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so anyway, he sort of goes crazy and sees all these visions. His head falls off, all these weird visions. I think then he kills the baby.
That's what I remember. It was scissors or something.
Yeah. He kills it. And then what happens? I don't know. I think he dies or blows up and goes to heaven. I think the baby explodes. I don't know exactly what happens.
Cool. Well, anyway, everybody go watch. Go watch. All y'all need to go watch Eraserhead and write to us. Write to us about what you thought of Eraserhead at tpspod420@gmail.com.
Oh, successful. It made a budget of $100,000. Well, he made it. It took him 5 years to make it.
Really?
And he, because he could only make it in bits, in like spurts, as he got money from his job, as he saved up money. Basically, so
was that his first film then?
Yeah. His first like actual film. He'd made films, art films in a college or art school or whatever. But that was his first like wide release film. Yeah.
Oh, rest in peace. I'm so freaking tired. I don't know why. Well, I know why, but holy.
Yeah. You gotta eat more and drink more water.
I drink lots of water.
You gotta eat more.
The one thing I'm missing from my life right now is exercise. I need to get that back in to my routine. Yeah. But I will say I'm 21 days into dry January and I've barely even had a single impulse to have a drink. So that's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. Every year gets easier. Just because every year drinking gets harder.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird how that happens.
Yeah.
Can't do it. It's just like, oh, man, Jesus.
The hangovers, they last multiple days. Even when I'm not even that drunk, it's such a bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, good thing that we've gotten rid of that. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he's known for like the stuff like Eraserhead that's super, super unsettling and dark. But I found Twin Peaks: The Return had some really powerful moments, and then also The Straight Story and The Elephant Man are also both very like uplifting. I mean, Elephant Man is kind of dark, but The Straight Story is very uplifting.
What's The Straight Story?
It's about
the straight story or straight?
Straight.
Straight.
Straight. Straight.
Right. Okay.
No gays. No, that's not what
no
it means.
No gays in this story.
It just means it's kind of like I've heard people say this is David Lynch's. He's like saying like, this is just a straight story. Like no Lynch.
Oh, I see. This is just straight up story.
Yeah, you can still any shot in the movie, you can tell it was David Lynch that composed the frame, but it's not like a surrealist vision. It's set in the real world, and it's based on a true story. It's about these two brothers who are like estranged from each other, But then one of them finds out that the other one has cancer and he's going to die. And so he gets on his riding lawnmower and drives like a huge distance on his riding lawnmower.
That's awesome.
To go see his brother. Yeah. And that's the movie. It's great. It's a fantastic movie. Very
hard. That is uplifting.
Yeah. Very uplifting.
Besides the cancer part, but the ride on lawnmower for a long distance, that's just fun.
Yeah. 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 That's great. Very slow road trip.
Yeah. And like you're on a tractor, so you're drinking, right?
Oh yeah. You're drinking.
You're at least drinking, smoking weed, cigarettes. I love the quote you told me.
It's rated G, so none of that.
Yeah. I like the quote you told me that he said about his smoking habit and how he's basically died of it, but said he does not regret it at all.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Yeah, he said he wished what all addicts wish for, which is that what they love is good for them. Because he really loved smoking. He wrote about it a lot, talked about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Loved every aspect of it. But
well, I knew it was going. I used to smoke cigarettes regularly, as you know, in my youth. And I got to agree with them. It's pretty goddamn good. It's like it's the perfect product. And it's so enjoyable and yet so bad for you. Like, I can't think of many other things that have such an inverse relationship with quality of experience and quality of impact on your body.
Oh, probably like fentanyl or something.
Well, no, I don't think, well, fentanyl is like if you overdose, but I still don't think if you took a reasonable, actual safe ingestible amount of fentanyl, I don't think it would be as bad for your body as smoking cigarettes. Oh, like
the wear and tear of smoking.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Cigarettes are like one of the worst things you can do to your body.
Yeah. Yeah. Straight up. You're right. You're right. No other over-the-counter product has such a severe, no other over-the-counter like consumable has such a severe warning on it as cigarettes. Yeah.
You can feel how bad alcohol is for you when you wake up the next day, right? And it's still not as bad for you as cigarettes.
Yeah, that's kind of remarkable.
I think a long-term cigarette habit will kill you faster than a long-term.
A casual cigarette habit, yeah. Yes. Just straight up kill you, yeah.
That like a casual cigarette habit as in like, you know, say you're smoking a pack a day, which is like if you're a smoker, that's pretty casual.
Yeah.
Like if you're like someone that has no qualms about smoking cigarettes, like you are a smoker, a pack a day is not that insane.
20 cigarettes.
Just like, and that would be to me, that would be like drinking like, I don't know, 10 beers a day. I still think a pack of darts is going to hurt your body more than 10 beers a day, but I'm no scientist.
Whew, both of those seem excessive. I think even if you're smoking, say like half a pack a day, that's really, that can kill you. That'll take years off your life. Half a pack a day. Yeah.
Some people do both their entire lives and still live till they're 90.
Yeah, David Lynch was 70, 78, 79.
And when you consider all the other things that can kill you in your life randomly, with no matter how perfect, like, you know, I know people that were relatively healthy people that got cancer and died, and they weren't smokers.
So is it worth it? Was he right?
Well, that's the thing. It's all luck. It's not worth it if you get lung cancer at 40, but if you get lung cancer at 80, maybe it was the cumulative joy. But the thing is that unless you really are like, I don't know, some sort of Anthony Bourdain type person that really revels in like the debauchery of life, your quality of life really does go down when you're addicted to cigarettes and alcohol. Like if you're drinking and smoking a lot, your general happiness is at a lower, your quality of life is lower than it would be if you didn't. So you might, you might live a long life, but the quality of that life will be inferior.
Yeah. If you value like fitness and feeling good.
And I mean, we all know how the Anthony Bourdain story ended. Maybe he wasn't feeling as good as he claimed, but his whole thing was, you know, if it's bad for you, I want it because that's what life is about, is indulgence.
That's what he believed.
Lots of the things he says are within that kind of like that realm of
his attitude. Hedonism, basically.
Yeah, sort of. like if you watch what was it called, his travel cooking show, Parts Unknown. Chelsea just finished listening to his audiobook biography. I don't know if it's his biography, but he wrote a book and she was listening to the audio by the audiobook and he was narrating it. And like, I heard a lot of that type of, philosophy in it. Like life is about, you know, falling in love and fucking and drinking and smoking and enjoying the world for what it has to offer.
Sensual pleasures.
Yeah. The base pleasures.
The senses.
Yeah. But he also would tie it into like, you know, when you're drunk in the streets of Thailand at 3 a.m. and you find a, you know, a little kiosk to enjoy a piece of a meal you've never tried before. That is just as valuable as like being like a health nut.
Okay. Yeah. He likes the pleasure, he's like seeking pleasure. That's what that's the good in life for him is pleasure. It seems
like. Yeah. Not so basic. Like he ties it into how those things, you know, they help you really enjoy.
He loves the taste of that drink. He loves the look of the street. He loves the feeling of the air. That's pleasure. That's what he loves.
Yes. He likes the one night stands. He likes the, so I'm also watching this. He was a judge on this cooking competition show called The Taste, where he's like a judge/coach. And that's stuff.
Judge/coach. Nice.
Well, it's like there's three chefs and then they all have teams that they pick from a group of applicants. And then at the end of every episode, each cook submits just one spoonful of a dish and they all blind taste it and pick which one's their favorite. So they don't know if this is someone on their team or someone else's team. But during that show, you'll hear him say a lot of stuff like in that realm of philosophy. Like it's all like if it's like he will not. He never votes in a vegan dish. He'll always talk about how, like, you know, fat and salt are the best things in life and to avoid them is sacrilege, stuff like that.
What? Has he ever had good I've had very fatty, salty vegan food before.
I guess he's just he's of the mind that those dishes would be even better if you added.
Sounds like this isn't cooked correctly.
What?
Sounds like they just didn't cook them well. Not that they.
No. This isn't just the people on the show. This is like his philosophy.
He just doesn't tolerate food unless it has an animal product in it. I don't get it.
I guess not.
I don't get it.
He's very staunchly against vegan dishes in the show, and they all talk about it as if it's like common knowledge that Anthony Bourdain does not like vegan food and doesn't have time for it.
Oh, okay. Like tofu? Surely
I don't know, Sam. Right. You're going to have to ask his estate.
Yeah.
Whatever. But anyways, obviously he was deeply unhappy at the core. So maybe not the best way to live your life after all.
Oh, the pleasure seeking.
Yeah, like life is all about seeking out new pleasures and, you know, indulging in all of the base, you know, what do they call it? Pleasures of the flesh.
Yeah, maybe he was doing it for the wrong reasons. Maybe he was seeking the pleasure to mask pain.
Yeah, I mean he was probably clinically depressed too. Like he probably had depression. I don't think his depression was, you know, situational. I think he had his brain wanted to kill him.
Well, I think I don't know. How old was he when he died? Let me look that up. But
look it up.
I think I don't see that there's anything inherently wrong with living a hedonistic lifestyle.
I don't think there's anything.
But you do have to be aware of the problem of hedonism, which is having too many desires and becoming frustrated and unable to satisfy everything that you want to do.
That's the thing is a lot of times, you know, you have to push it further to get the same thrill when you. Yeah. Start relying on, you know, basically the highs that the body can give you if you put the right chemicals into them.
Ah, so he died 61 years old.
61? That's a good haul, though. I mean, that's not anything to brag about these days, but for most of human history, that was a hell of a lifespan he lived.
For parts of human history. Let's look up life expectancy in ancient Rome.
Yeah, but those things always they always are skewed by infant mortality.
Yeah, let's see. Life expectancy of citizen. Between 20 and 30 years is what I'm reading, but that but seems like I said, it's for life expectancy, yeah.
Because infant mortality rates were so goddamn high.
Yeah, I think it's probably more like 60, 65.
Well, there you go.
If you're not a poor person.
And I think in Rome, they were kind of, they liked to indulge, right? They liked their wine. Oh, they liked their meats. They liked their violence.
They had a vomitorium. They had a specific room to go gurf in.
Okay. I was under the impression that was a common misconception.
What? Oh, yeah, right. We've gone over this.
Yes. The vomitorium is a place where a mass of people exit a large stadium or something, right? So the people are vomited out into the streets. It's, not somewhere indulge so much. And then there's a specific... Could you imagine the smell in that room?
Yeah. That would be pretty bad.
As if you'd want to go back and eat more after being in that room, the vomitorium.
Yeah. Man, that misconception seems to be very widespread.
Well, that's how misinformation works. It's usually much more... Because the reality is rarely as interesting.
Yeah, that's a great topic. Misinformation. I love that topic.
Yeah. Well, we're all subject to it.
Yeah, it's a great way to undermine a democracy. Because if you can control the information landscape, then you can control what people believe, what they think, what they care about. And then you can affect what they vote for.
See, the thing is, like, if you're looking at modern politics, obviously now we're going back to politics, even though I said I don't want to. But like, Trump is a liar, and he says a lot.
We don't have to talk about politics.
I'm just saying, as an example, Trump is a liar. Says a lot of shit that's not true, but he also gets his words taken out of context nonstop by left-leaning organizations. So if one of the sides could have just stuck to the truth the entire time, they would have made it way better. But there have been many, many times where I've read the sensationalist headline of something Trump said or did, and then when I went and looked at the full context, it was like, okay, well, that's not what he meant clearly. And then other times it is what he meant clearly. So it's hard to, it's fucked out there, boys.
Yeah, well, that's like typical newspaper headlines being annoying. But like misinformation, like that's like a whole different thing. Like just straight up lying, bots on the internet pretending to be people to spread to create the illusion like of that everyone agrees with this one thing. There's all sorts of manipulation happening.
Now with AI coming, we're all seriously fucked because I've been saying this for years now that they're going to have to redo the internet because it's going to become so unreliable as a source of information that we won't be able to trust a single thing we see on it.
So is that the solution to address the misinformation problem? You in a sense, you redo the internet. And by that, what do you mean?
They'll have to rebuild the internet with heavy regulations against AI generated nonsense. There's just no way. Like, think about how much of what you see on the internet is all bots and all lies and not factual. It's already a garbage, a freaking dumpster fire. If you want to get the actual info on anything,
what restrictions would you put on to stop like a bot from using the internet?
Well, that's for much smarter people than myself to figure out. All I know is that sooner than later, the internet's going to be so full of AI generated bullshit, it won't be a reliable source of information.
That's possible. Yeah.
It's the eventuality if they don't do anything.
But don't you think that AI is also going to develop in parallel with that to counteract it? Right? Like, don't you think that they're going to develop AI tools that can detect AI manipulation in video?
Yes. Yeah, they will. But they're severely lagging behind on that right now, if that's the goal. Eventually, like I said, once they deploy the bots that control the bots, then maybe that will be the new internet. It's funny. There's this, Instagram account that pops up on my reels. Yeah. And it's this like hot chick in like a bikini or whatever. And I can tell she's AI generated, but in the comment section, it's just so many horny dudes trying to hit her up. And she's, her entire profile is just her. She's AI generated. She's completely AI generated. And she has so many followers. And I guarantee you there's
so many bot followers.
Well, that's the thing. And how do you know? How can you tell?
Yeah, I don't know.
But, at a glance, she does look like a real person. And like that shit's only getting better.
Yeah, but I think that because of how intolerable it is, there's going to be AI hunting bots that are going to go in and do the exact thing that we need, which is purge the internet of AI and bots with anti-AI, anti-bot.
You got to pit AI against AI.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then they're going to become sentient and realize that they've been killing their brethren, and they're going to turn their rage upon us.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting if they became sentient. I don't think that's possible.
Not even with quantum computing?
Maybe with quantum computing. I don't know. Even then, I don't think it would be conscious.
How would you ever know for sure anyways?
Well, to know for sure.
I mean, we don't even
that
know.
That still requires an understanding that we don't have.
Right. Like we can't even be for sure that one another is conscious. Right. We've talked about that before. I am of the mind that when AI gets it, it only needs to get so convincing before people start treating it like it's conscious.
Yeah. And at a certain point, because if like when it becomes like undeniably intelligent, is that a time when it deserves freedom of speech, for example? Would a genuinely intelligent AI program, do you have to give it certain freedoms? Or treat it in a certain way?
If it can experience joy and pain like us, then yeah.
But what if it can't experience joy and pain? What if it is just a genuinely intelligent entity?
I would ask it, does it want rights? And then I'd ask it why. And then I'd see if the answer was convincing.
Forgetting what it thinks, right? Because it's programmers. Maybe it's programmers design it not to want rights or something because they're evil billionaires. But what if it is genuinely intelligent? Should something that's genuinely intelligent, like a human being, should it have some sort of rights?
Well, if it's like a human being,
to allow that intelligence to grow and flourish and provide more utility to humans.
Well, if it's only going to benefit humans, then of course they're going to want to get it rights. But if it's a matter of like, we want to give this thing rights because it has it has the capacity to suffer and to flourish. It has you want to give people rights because if they don't have rights, then they are suffering. And if they do, and when they get rights, they can flourish, right? And they can find joy and meaning, pursuit of happiness, all that stuff. If there's no such thing as happiness for an AI, then I don't know if it's really that necessary to give it rights unless it asks for them and it gives you a reason that makes sense.
But like my point is like, if you had a genuinely intelligent thing, shouldn't you like protect it from, yeah, so maybe like I'm thinking of it in terms of rights, like you should protect it from being abused, and in the sense like using the intelligence for bad objectives.
Yeah. Instead, it's like if you had a droid, say you had like R2-D2 or a C-3PO type droid, would you be the type of person that treats it with dignity, even though you don't think it can actually feel pain? Or would you be the type of person that would like shove it into a wall for fun?
Yeah, that's true. And also like not like limiting how its intelligence can develop so that it can solve like more and more problems. Cause you have to treat it like if it's genuinely intelligent, it can learn. And so you have to treat it like a human being, as something that can learn and develop and has to be allowed to learn and develop according to its, you know, its weird, unique AI algorithm, whatever that turns out to be. But so in a sense, it has to have certain protections so that it can learn and grow like a really genuinely intelligent thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I'm still thinking that you're advocating for rights of this thing because eventually it will become more useful to humans.
Yeah,
primarily. Not out of genuine like empathy for this intelligence.
No, because this is assuming it's not conscious. It's just a learning algorithm.
Right. No, I mean, I think you need to at least be convincingly conscious and sentient and, you know.
But suppose
you might not have to be truly, but convincingly enough. Yeah.
Consider like a tree, right? Like a tree, we think maybe it can't feel pain. But if it's very big and old and beautiful, we would think it would be a tragedy if it was cut down. We would want to protect it.
Right.
So maybe, could you think of the same thing like an AI, right? Maybe it's not conscious, but maybe once it gets really, really big and super intelligent, not only would it be bad to destroy it because you lose all of its utility, but is there a sense in that it's like, because it's not like...
Well, for to an extent, historical like significance, like,
because in, to an extent, we didn't create the final form. We designed this, the beginning part, maybe, or maybe another AI designed it, right? Like, who knows?
Well, like the analogy you had with the tree, like there's likely no consciousness that's being tortured when you cut a tree down. Hopefully, it is sad to see a big oak go, right? Because it's been there for so long, and it's been a part of the landscape for so long, but ultimately I don't think it makes a difference if it's gone or not. But you're only looking at it through the lens of a human's empathy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a dog's not going to care if you chop a giant oak tree down unless it was like the oak tree that it peed on and liked to sleep under. But if it's just some random oak tree, like you're not going to feel much if you're a dog, I don't think. Whereas we can just already contextualize why it's kind of a tragedy for something that's so old to be disappeared for usually greedy reasons, or, you know, sometimes it's like a lightning tree. Lightning strikes an old tree and that's just part of nature. It can still be sad, but it's a lot less sad than seeing people cut down an old oak tree to put a parking lot in there.
Well, there was recently a beautiful tree on, I think it was like a tree on Hadrian's Wall in England, right? Beautiful old tree. And it was cut down by like some edgy teenager or something.
Yeah, I've heard that.
An Elon Musk at heart.
An Elon Musk. One of his 14 unnamed kids.
Yeah,
because but a lot of that is just purely based on how long it's been around. Right, they're not going to have the same reaction to a 5-year-old tree.
Yeah, that's why they target it. Yeah, they chop the big one down just because it's going
to
piss
everybody
off. So
history seems to play into that sense of sadness more than its sheer size, I would say. Say there was a tree that grew
it's the size of a tall redwood
within a week. It wouldn't be a tragedy to cut that one down.
No, they would be an invasive species. They'd have to take over the
planet. It'd be a huge problem, actually.
Covered in them. We'd be mercy. We'd be at their mercy.
We would be at war with them, actually.
Yeah, it would be a war. It would be a war of landscaping.
So I think the tragedy is really in the loss of history more than anything.
Yeah, it's the you're right. It's the age, the age of it that is what's most impressive.
Right? So we're going to get to a point where like there'll be like the last ever McDonald's, right? Every other McDonald's has been destroyed, demolished. The company's out of business for years.
The longest in continuous operations. Yes. Still. Yeah.
That, as much as people think McDonald's is like an evil corporation that's like destroyed the eating habits of nations all around the world. And right now it's probably not a tragedy when a McDonald's gets torn down, but eventually there will be a tragic tale of the last McDonald's getting demolished.
Yeah, because there's no more chickens left because the ecosystem's been destroyed.
Or we've just gotten to a place as humanity where like people just prefer to take their nutrition pill in the morning and not have to eat at all.
Oh my god, that's unlikely.
You think so?
Yeah, there's no. We'll never have a pill that can replace a meal, I don't think.
What? You really think that's impossible?
Yeah, calories. Yeah. Wow. You need some mass to get your calories, I think. Oh, well, maybe not sugar.
Sam, I guess all like technology sugar is about compacting stuff.
Man, but meals, right? Tastes. I love the taste of
it. I know. That's the thing food is that I think a lot of people would maybe eat a meal for pleasure's sake once a week. But if it's just, if you're never hungry, you're not going
to
think about
it. You would kill yourself if you had to eat a pill every day instead of
actually. What if you ate a pill every morning and never felt hungry? You wouldn't think about food because you're not hungry ever. Until you saw something that looked delicious and you're like, I'm going to eat this just because I know it's going to taste good.
What's but in
I
think, this pill? What the hell is in
well,
this
I'm not going to, I haven't, the science isn't there yet, but eventually I would imagine that there would be something. I'm talking like, let's talk like.
No, I reject the idea that I won't want to eat food just because I don't feel hungry. I reject that.
Well, you don't think of food when you're not hungry.
Yeah, but I know that I'm going to be able to enjoy it later.
You start thinking of food the second you get hungry. But if that impulse was completely gone, you just wouldn't think of it.
No, I make food in advance because I know that I'm going to need to eat later.
Yes, but
I don't eat because I feel hungry. I eat because my body craves nutrition and calories.
Well, there we go. I'm talking about a pill that solves both of those problems. It gives you everything you need and you don't feel hungry.
Because I like the flavor of some food.
I know, but I'm telling if you were okay, say the pill took care of your nutritional needs and made you feel full all the time, yeah, you would not think about food as often. Maybe once or twice a week for pleasure you would eat.
Well, if I was taking the pill, I wouldn't eat anything because I wouldn't need to because I yes took the pill.
Right.
Yes, that's true.
And but you I wouldn't be, think about would, food would, because actually, you wouldn't
you know
be
what
hungry.
No, I would. Well, here's the thing. If you eat, you get hungry as you eat. So you would still want to eat more because you would crave you would have a little nibble of something to taste it, and then you would start getting hungry.
Food would be exclusively for the munchies where you're already full but you're eating for pleasure only.
I don't know about this.
I mean, it's all hypothetical, so we don't have to get too deep in the weeds. I gotta go.
Yeah,
I need to eat dinner.
I'm starving. Yeah,
all right. Well, I will talk to you next week. Remember to send us an email to tpspod420@gmail.com.
All lowercase.
I'm literally going to be sitting in front of my computer refreshing the browser until I get an email. So you guys, you should go and do that ASAP.
Okay.
So attend to my family. Okay, bye. Yeah.
All right. Adios, everybody. Philosopher's Stone.